All right, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, in this week's passage, Paul was teaching, In last week's passage, it was about the Lord's Day, right? Or the day of the Lord. Paul was teaching the Thessalonians about the day Jesus will return, and he was describing that epic reversal in world history, and he was addressing a particular worry that the Thessalonians had. They were worried that if they died before Jesus returns, they might miss that great day. And Paul basically explained to them, okay, there's no need for FOMO. Okay, everybody will be there. The dead will rise, and we will have a great reunion, and we will all be there to welcome Jesus back. So that was last week's passage. It was really focusing on that particular day. But then how do we live before that day comes? All right, how do we prepare for that day? That's today's passage. Now, before we dive in, let's review once more what that day is going to be like. Now, if we need to first remember what that day is going to be like for us to know how to prepare for it, right? So I gave a summary of the great day going through the Bible last week. Today, I'll take you to look at that day from one particular Old Testament passage. Okay, just looking at that day through one particular window. I'm going to take you to Isaiah 59. I'll show the passage on the screen. Now, this passage in Isaiah 59, it was originally referring to a particular historical situation in Israel, but it was later used as an imagery for the return of Jesus. Okay? We'll read that passage, and you'll see something interesting. Just imagine, imagine that this is talking about Jesus' return. All right. Okay. This passage begins with a problematic situation, and that describes the current state of the world. Okay, it says, "Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands far away. For truth has stumbled in the public squares, and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey." So this is describing the injustice that we experience in the world. It was originally referring to a time period in Israel where they experienced great injustice. But this also describes the dark world in general. Like, those who depart from evil, those who insist on doing good, they are persecuted by the dark world. That's the experience of Christians today and Christians back in the days, the Thessalonians. Now, but, next verse, "The Lord saw it and it displeased him that there was no justice." God was not unaware of the situation, and he cared, and the situation made him angry. "And he saw that there was no man and wondered that there was no one to intercede. Nobody seemed to be able to do anything about the injustice. So God decided to take it upon himself and intervened. Then his own arm brought him salvation and his righteousness upheld him." He decided to bring his own righteousness to bear and bring that righteousness into this unrighteous world. So this is a picture of God taking his good stuff, invading this world of darkness. And here's the imagery that will be important, okay? What's he gonna wear when he comes? "He put on righteousness as a breastplate and a helmet of salvation on his head." Okay, this is what he's gonna wear when he comes. To do what? "According to their deeds, so will he repay. Wrath to his adversaries, repayment to his enemies." Okay. So bad people will be judged. But those who have repented from transgression, those who follow God's way, they will have a redeemer coming out of Zion, and that redeemer will save them. Okay, so when God comes later, we know it's Jesus coming. When he intervenes, this is what he's going to wear: breastplate and helmet. And there are going to be two groups of people. One will suffer his wrath, and those who have repented, they will be saved. So this is a very simple and clear picture of what God's return will look like. That was in Isaiah 59. Now let's turn back to 1 Thessalonians 5, our passage today. So you could already tell that Paul's teaching here is loosely based on Isaiah 59. Now, so, but then here in Paul's teaching, he adds a few layers to it. He uses the darkness of the night to describe that unjust world. And that's where we are right now. We're currently living in that dark world, and we're waiting for Jesus to return and to bring forth the daylight of his righteous kingdom. And in verse 5, Paul describes Christians as those living in the following day. Although we are currently living in the dark night, we already belong to the following day. So we are called, in this passage, the children of light, the children of the day. And in verse 9, Paul says that we children of light, we Christians, are those who will obtain salvation in the end. And those destined for wrath, they are the people, in this imagery, they are the people who fall asleep, those who get drunk at night. Okay, so that's the imagery Paul is using. Okay, now we're ready to take a closer look. Now, first question Paul answered was, when is this going to happen? Okay. When is Jesus going to return? Is there a timeline that we can follow? When is this night going to end? When will the sun rise? Well, in the first three verses, it sounds like the coming of Jesus is not going to be like the break of dawn. It's not going to be like, oh, it's getting brighter and brighter, and then, oh, all of a sudden we see the sun. It's not like that. It's more like, if you want to use the night imagery, it's more like the thief coming to you at night. It's going to be a surprising situation. Nobody predicted when a thief is going to come. And for those who are of the dark night, those who fall asleep, those who don't think there's anything's going to change, they're just comfortable at night. They fall asleep, they get drunk, and they will be surprised by the thief. They will be caught off guard. And once the thief comes, it's going to be like a pregnant woman experiencing labor pains. Once the thief comes, you can't be like, oh, could you come back a little later? All right, you can't say no to it. All right, there's no escape. God's wrath will certainly fall upon those who are destined for wrath. Okay, but that's for that group of people. Those who are destined for wrath. They don't believe the sun is ever going to come up. They thought that this dark night will continue forever and ever. Now, what about for the children of light? What about us? Are we going to get a timeline of some sort? Are we going to get notified? Are we waiting for Jesus like how we wait for plumbers, he's going to call us 30 minutes before he arrives, right? Are we going to get a notification? Doesn't seem like it, right? Doesn't seem like it. Now, it does say in verse 4, now this is a little interesting, right? In verse 4, it does say that day should not surprise the children of light as a thief. It should not surprise us as a thief. But in later verses, it seems like that's not because we know precisely when the thief is coming. It's because we never fall asleep. We never went to sleep or get drunk. Again, the children of light are not caught off guard, not because they know the timing, but because their guard was always up. They're awake and sober at all times. Okay, that's what Paul is saying. We stay sober always. Now, what does it mean to stay sober? That's in verse 8. What does it mean to stay awake in the middle of the night? In verse 8, the children of light, they put on the breastplate of faith and love, and they wear a helmet of the hope of salvation. Staying awake means to wear that armor. Now, you might be wondering, wait, isn't that what Jesus is going to wear when he returns? Exactly, right? So the way Christians stay alert and prepared for Jesus' return is to wear the matching gear of war with the coming king. It's a matching uniform, so to speak, right? We wear the same outfit as the coming king, but we're not matching with him in the exact same way. Okay, it's not like we're joining him in pouring out God's wrath onto the enemies or anything like that. Okay, it's a little different. Notice that the descriptions of the armors, they are related but different. And here's probably a good way to make sense of it. Okay, Isaiah describes God as the giver, the provider of those good stuff, right? God is bringing in the righteousness and salvation to the world. And Paul describes Christians as the recipients of what God brings. So if we want to use a modern analogy, it's probably like we're the paired up receiver of some sort to be able to receive God's goodness. See, God brings his righteousness into the world, and we receive that righteousness how? By our faith, right? Justification by faith, right? Does that ring any bell? All right, we have faith in God, and his righteousness is counted toward us. We are the receiver. And once we receive that righteousness, we live it out, and that is our love, right? Righteousness being lived out, justice being lived out, that's our love. And God's helmet is salvation, that's what he's bringing into the world, and ours is the hope of that salvation, right? We're receiving that salvation. All right, all that is to say, we stay alert at night by keeping our matching armor on, and that means to continue to live out the three signs of Christian life that we've been talking about. All right, throughout this book, you've seen this little sprout many, many times. All right, those are the three signs of Christian life. And when Jesus comes, we who wear those three signs of Christian life, we will be saved because we're matched up with him, and he recognizes us as his. But those who are asleep or are drunk in the night, they will not escape God's wrath. So that's the gist of this passage. We won't know the timing, so we stay sober, and we stay sober by wearing this armor. Now let's bring this passage closer to our daily lives. Okay? Now, for us Christians today, we believe that Jesus is coming back. All right, so this world as it is will not go on forever. Things are going to change. It's inevitable. So how do we prepare for it? Now, obviously, we're not supposed to get comfortable in the night because it's going to end. We should be prepared for the coming of the day. How? How do we do it? Now, first of all, we must realize that there's no way for us to know exactly when he will return. Even for us, even for his people, it'll be sort of a surprise in terms of timing. So the way we prepare for the coming of Jesus is not going to be by chasing down the different clues in the Bible or world phenomenon to follow some Christian podcasters describing who Iran is in the Bible or who the Antichrist might be. We don't need to seek any special signs or do any extra to get us more prepared for it, like figuring out world trend to know when to stock up on canned tuna or something like that. No need for that. Okay? Paul says very clearly, regardless of the timing, the way we prepare is to do the same things. It's to do the most ordinary Christian work of faith, love, and hope. All right? Nothing special, nothing esoteric, just the basics all the time. Keeping our faith in Jesus, loving with the love of Jesus, and keeping our hope in Jesus. And that's it. That's it. But here's the thing about that armor, though, right? The thing about that sort of armor is, I don't know if you've worn that sort of thing before. I don't know, medieval pieces, right? Even worse than those things, right? They are very uncomfortable. They're heavy, they're clunky, they don't breathe well. It's not easy to keep wearing those things, especially in the middle of the night, right? When everybody around you is falling asleep, they're getting drunk, they're partying, they're chilling, and you're the only person who's wearing that full armor suit. It's like, that's just silly. It's understandable that people will want to take off that armor and just relax, right? Just slip into the night and chill. Right, it's uncomfortable to believe in Jesus and follow his teaching in this world. Right? It's much easier to live by what we can see and control and to follow the way of the world. It's much easier, much more comfortable. And it's uncomfortable to love others as Jesus loves. It's much easier and much more convenient to only love those who can repay us. Right? That's more natural. That's chilling. Also, it's uncomfortable to hope in Jesus and hope for his future kingdom. Right? Who likes delayed gratification, right? It's much easier to focus my pursuit on things I can enjoy right now, like everybody else around me, right? Again, it's very tempting to want to take off the heavy armor in the middle of the night and relax a bit. After all, we've been waiting for millennia and Jesus still hasn't come back, right? What are the odds that he will return the moment I take off this armor, right? What are the odds? No, this is not really a main point, but it's not funny, but in many war movies, right, you've seen that trope, right? A soldier catches a break and takes off the helmet. You know what's going to happen next, right? That's in all war movies. But that's not really the point, because I'm not saying that Jesus will definitely return the moment you loosen your guard, right? The danger isn't primarily that you pick the wrong 5 minutes to relax. The danger is that you think you're okay without the armor at all, okay? Again, the timing is not really the main point. It's not like, as long as you have the armor on the moment Jesus returns, you're good. Right? It's not like that. The deeper issue is really about belonging. Now, who do you belong to? Which world do you belong to? Right? We belong to the following day. So even at night, we really should not behave like the people of darkness. That's our identity. And it's dangerous because once we give up on our identity and start living like the people of the night, once we allow our love to grow cold, we can easily get sucked into the dark night and get drunk, and soon we will find ourselves belonging to the dark night. Again, it's dangerous. There's a certain danger to it. So verse 11, Paul calls us to keep encouraging one another and build one another up. Right, Paul is warning here about this danger and encourage us to keep each other awake. Right, we're not asked to stay awake alone. Nobody is asked to stay awake alone. It's too hard, and we're not asked to do that. We're called to keep each other awake. Right? Wake people up when they're dozing off. Check the gear for your mates so that we can enjoy the salvation together in the end. That's what we're called to do as a Christian community. Now, finally, I will address one issue, okay? Just one theological issue. Because this call, this warning, and this call to stay awake together, it may make it sound like our final salvation depends on our performance. As though our final salvation depends on us successfully staying awake together, right? It could sound scary, right? What if we fail? What if some people fail to do that? And doesn't that make our salvation depend on our work? That doesn't sound right. All right, I'm going to try to talk about this. All right, now, I will take a look at this from another angle. And here's the bottom line. Verse 9. Here's the bottom, the very bedrock of our belief. Verse 9 says, God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through Jesus. Now, this is a simple truth statement, and let's try to make it fit the other aspects that we're thinking about. Okay, so see, for us Christians, God has planned that we would eventually be saved. That's what it says. We are destined to obtain salvation. That's a very blanket statement. All right, we are planned to eventually be saved. So that means God has made a plan that we will stay awake till the end. That's what it says. So from this angle, it sounds like our staying awake to the end is not entirely up to us. It's also God's business to some degree. All right? So, do we have any confidence that God will fulfill his plan and keep us awake till the end? Do we have any confidence that he will do that? Yes. Verse 10 is actually a further description of what verse 9 is saying. Verse 10 says that, for God to save us, God has already sent Jesus to die for us. Okay, he died to pay for our sins so that we can belong to him. And here it says that we might live with him. We might live with him forever. That's what he paid the price of his son's life for, that we can live with him forever. Okay, so he has paid that full price, so that purchase will go through. He's paid that high price. You really think he's going to give up halfway through our salvation process? No, he's not going to do that. Right? He is heavily invested in saving us till the end. So our staying awake is not entirely dependent on ourselves, as if God is just watching us from afar, right? Folding his arms, waiting to see if we'll make it or not. No, he is more invested in it than we think. God cares very deeply about our staying awake till the end, because again, he already paid the price of his son's life. So we can trust that he will see to it that our salvation will eventually be successful as he destined. Okay, so that's another angle. That's quite a blanket statement. How does that fit with another angle? Because we can ask, like, okay, but if he will make sure that we will stay awake till the end, why did he even give us this warning? Why did he call us to stay awake? If we can't fail, why this warning? Right? Here's how we could understand this. All right. This warning here is a means, is a tool God is using to accomplish that plan. Okay, it's like a rod or a goad that shepherds use to keep the sheep out of danger. Right? It's the tool that shepherds would use to keep the sheep in check. So the shepherd is keeping the sheep from real danger. Right. If they don't follow the rod, they will experience real danger, but God's rod will not fail. Right? He cares too much for it to fail, and he's too powerful for this to fail. So it's a real warning about a real danger, but the shepherd who gave this warning, he's too good to fail. And yes, in some sense, our final salvation does depend on our work. Our effort is necessary in the sense that the sheep still need to walk on their own feet to come back to safety, right? It still depends on our work in that sense. But according to God's plan, our work will eventually lead to success. And that should actually give us more confidence and a greater willingness to work hard, knowing that this work will not be wasted, knowing that this work will work. All right, if you work on a project and you are like 10% sure that it's going to work, what's your motivation to really put in your effort in it? All right. But if there is a difficult task, but somehow you're assured that it's for sure going to work, you don't see how, but you know it's going to work, This gives you the motivation to find out how it's going to work and enjoy that success in the end. That's how we work, and God also works for our salvation. And we've seen that in Galatians. We've seen that in Philippians. So this is nothing new for us. But this is how Paul talks about our preparation for that great day. We stay alert, but God keeps us. And it will show up once more next time we are in this letter as well. Now, finally, another important way God has planned to preserve us is his command for us to take communion regularly. Because at communion, we remember whom we belong to. We remember how Jesus died for us on the cross. That's how much God loved us and how determined he is to save us and keep us till the end. So as we remember, as we have confidence in God and his care, we have that assurance and that confidence to keep wearing that armor, to have faith and to have love and have hope when things are really uncomfortable. So I will once more invite you to come up front. We'll make a circle and we will take communion together.